And Andy Bagley joins us. You can follow him on Twitter at Extra Bags, of course. How you doing, Andy?
Hey, Andy.
I'm good, Marty. I'm good, Patrick. How are you guys today?
Pretty good. And, you know, boy, as I said earlier on the show, Hunter Pence, he's become like the buzzword for everybody. What's the status of Hunter Pence? What do you think will happen?
You know, I think the Giants will listen. They're going to listen on everybody. They're kind of duty-bound to, aren't they? Because they've got a lot of questions to answer before they put together next year's team. Both the rotation has got a lot of question marks in it beyond Kane and Bumgarner, and the outfield certainly has a lot of questions, and Pence is a free agent. You can't control 100% whether he's going to be back or not. So I think that they do want him back, and I think they will make the qualifying offer to him. But, you know, if a team bowls him over, they definitely have to listen. I don't think that's going to happen, mainly because, you know, you look at what the Giants gave up to get him last year. This is what I've sort of been explaining to people. Would you take Tommy Joseph, Seth Rosine, and Nate Sherholtz back right now for Hunter Pence? Would that be worth it to not give him the draft pick and maybe have a better opportunity to re-sign him? Because, you know, that's what the Giants had to give up to get him when they had, you know, a couple months plus another year of club control. Now, when you deal Pence, you're only dealing him for a couple of months, and then he's a free agent. So stands to reason they wouldn't get as much for him as they gave up for him. So if a team gives up a young, controllable starting pitcher, I think that they would deal him, but I don't think the chances of that happening are very good.
Yeah, no, I agree with you on that. Texas is an interesting team for me because they're so desperate to win down there, and they want to win a World Series. They've been in the World Series twice. They haven't won it. They're in a division with the A's, who knocked them out last year, of course, from the division.
Right.
Angels are in it. I think if you dealt with Texas, you may be able to get something from Texas. They're one of those teams that gives up people to get somebody.
Well, and you know that Pence is from UT Arlington, so that's his backyard, and so you know he might be excited for the opportunity to go there as much as he wants to stay in San Francisco, and has said that many times. I do know that another Rangers scout, in addition to their regular coverage scout, was there last night. He wouldn't tell me specifically if he was there to see Pence, but definitely when you're looking at the Cubs and the Giants, you're looking at picking over a couple of carcasses here, given the way these teams have played. So I do think there's going to be some level of conversation, but I would say it's probably unlikely.
Yeah, Andy Baggerly on KNBR 680. Hey, Andy, I just worry that if they get to Wednesday without having traded Pence, they may lose him in the free agent or at the end of the year, and then you have no compensation, and you're still stuck with nobody out in right field. So, to me, the less risky move is trying to trade him for some prospects or for an established player. So, I don't know. Maybe I'm way off on that. What do you think?
Well, you know, you would get a draft pick if you offer him that qualifying offer. About
$13 million.
$13.8 million, yeah. And if he turns it down, which he probably would because it's only a one-year deal, then you would get draft pick compensation. So, you know, that you don't just sneeze at that. Teams don't like to give away draft picks, and the other thing is that, you know, it's not just that, like, a sandwich round pick. It would be a team actually giving up their first round pick to sign him. So, you know, that could suppress the amount of money that he's going to command. We saw it happen with Kyle Loesch and a few other guys. Teams just don't want to cross the bridge and give up those draft picks. So, but you know what? This team has a lot of problems, and they're not just one player away. Right. And yet, I think Henry Schulman put it very well in a blog he wrote recently. They have Buster Posey. They've got Madison Bumgarner. They've got Matt Cain under contract. These are premium-type talents, and they're either entering their prime or pretty much in it right now. So this is not a tear-it-down, rebuild situation. They've got to try to find a way to find enough quality pieces to plug back in that they can leap right back up and contend in the division again, because, you know, it's staggering. They don't have the worst rotation ERA in the National League anymore. The Padres and Brewers slipped below them yesterday, but they're third to the worst at 470. They've committed the most errors in the National League. The offense has disappeared for long stretches after all those great comeback wins in April and May. And you think, why are people clinging to hope that this team that has played so poorly in all areas, you know, is not out of it? And I think the reason is, they're 29-21 against the National League West. The only other team within the division that has a winning record within the division is the Rockies. And they really haven't looked outclassed by the Diamondbacks, by the Rockies, by the Dodgers, when they've played them, aside from a few games here and there. So that's just sort of, I think, what's so hard for for fans to rationalize is they haven't looked like the worst team in the NL West at all. In fact, they've looked like the best at times. But on the whole, obviously, they're just not anywhere near in the standings where they need to be. And they can you can do the math and figure out what happens for them to jump in it. So I think it's pretty much we know what's going to happen. It's just they got to get through these next couple months and try to put themselves in a better position for next year.
Yeah, that 23-41 jumps out at me. Andy Bagley is with us. You follow him on Twitter at CSN Bags, and that's with two G's. What do you think of Matt Cain last night?
I thought he looked really good. I mean, he got in that quick game early with the error and obviously had the stuff to strike out the three middle hitters in the Cubs lineup. And, you know, that's a really good sign, obviously, that he could come back and look as healthy as he has in his last two starts, given what the Giants have invested in him, not only financially but emotionally, as the rock in that rotation. But you know what? I think one of the reasons they went out and got that Guillermo Moscoso, maybe they'll look to get some other innings guys, is if they want the option to lighten the load on Cain and Bumgarner, at least kind of like, you know, keep their pitch counts below 100 the rest of the year or even shut them down, they don't really have that option because they don't have anybody else they could give the ball to. So, you know, maybe that's part of the thinking in getting a guy like Moscoso is maybe when he comes up, you know, he could soak up a few rotation spots, or they could even go to a six-man rotation or something like that, just to kind of pace people through so you can freshen everybody else up for next year.
Andy, Brandon Belt. You know, we saw the game last night, and every time something happened, he was in the middle of it, and it wasn't always good. What's his future here? How do you think the organization really assesses him?
Boy, what do you think about him, Marty? Because do you think he's a better hitter than he was at this time last year? Because his OPS is almost the same, but the on-base is down and the slugging is up. So I think that Belt's almost, you know, taken to heart this thought that he's got to let the bat go a little more and be a little more aggressive. And I think he's swinging for the fences a little bit more, and he has hit more home runs. But his on-base might have taken a hit because of that.
Yeah, he's so too inconsistent for me. You see these at-bats where he's just lost, and there's just something about him. He's hitting eighth today. He's your first baseman, and there's something about that that doesn't ring well for me. Is he James Loney? It's hard for me to say. I think the Giants value him. They don't want to lose him. But at some point, he's got to bite the bullet and say, all right, I'm in the big leagues. I'm going to do what they say. I'm going to become a little bit of a different hitter. And I'm going to let it go and really get it done. Now, he may never get it done, but I think he's got to fight a little bit for his Giants' life here over the next couple of months.
I think if there's one thing that he can really improve, it's his two-strike approach and just foul off tough pitches. And he's a guy who does work deep counts, but I think that's because he sees a lot of pitches. You look at what he's done with after an 0-2 count, and he's sitting actually 197, which is not good, but it's actually a little bit above the league average. But that to me would be the biggest thing. Just see more fight in his at-bats. And it doesn't necessarily mean you're swinging first pitch or you're aggressive, but, you know, I always go back to Barry Bonds, and it's hard to compare any hitter to Barry Bonds, who's the best hitter I've ever seen. But Barry he was a hunter in that batter's box. You know, he would lay off the pitches that were meant to fool him, and then he would, you know, key in on his pitch to hit. And then when he got his pitch to hit, he was very aggressive, and he took a very forceful cut. And I think that's what Belt needs to do, because, you know, he does see a lot of pitches, and he does draw walks. And I think he's still trying to figure out how to be that selectively aggressive type of guy. Once he can figure that out, he does have the talent. He's got the bat speed. He's got everything in his arsenal to be a very good major league hitter. I think he's a better hitter than James Loney. He's got more power potential. But, you know, obviously the team invests in you two ways, right? They give you either your salary and they give you at bats as a hitter. And, right now, Belt, I think you can probably say, has not given the Giants the best return on their investment with the at-bats he's gotten, and eventually you stop getting those at-bats if the team finds somebody else they like better. So, you know, I think they've got so many things on their plate this offseason that maybe, you know, finding a replacement for Belt at first base may be too far down the list for them to get to, and we may have another year of Brandon at first base, but No, he's going to be talked about a lot this offseason in terms of just how comfortable the Giants are with him as an everyday player again.
Andy, let me just ask you this real quickly. In terms of the ball club and Brandon Belt and his game last night, and you addressed this in your column at csnbayarea.com, is his ability to bounce back, his emotional state coming into today's game and the rest of the season. Who in that clubhouse is the kind of leader that could put their arm around him and help him kind of get over all the mistakes last night? Or is there anybody in that clubhouse capable of doing that for Belt? Is there a team leader?
You know, I just don't think players do that a whole lot for each other. I think that you're just sort of expected when you have a bad game just to brush it off, and you don't necessarily need the recognition or to explain yourself. You just go out the next day and you play better, and that's what everybody's going to expect of him. That's what he's going to expect of himself. And I did see quite a different approach. He had his shoulders held back, and he was answering the questions, and he did not look like he was absolutely emotionally devastated like he did, you know, in Philadelphia that day that we were alluding to. I think he has grown and gotten a little bit tougher in the game, and dealt with the highs and lows a little bit better. And so, in a way, how he goes out there and what kind of game he has today, I think, is going to tell you a lot.
I appreciate it. Andy, now you're off to Washington, right?
Yep, I'm packing up and I'm heading off to the White House, flying tomorrow, and we'll get there bright and early for Monday, and it should be fun. It's kind of funny to think we were just there in 2011. But what's neat is Buster Posey wasn't able to make that trip because he had just had surgery to take the screws out that were holding his ankle in place, and so he couldn't travel in 2011. So he's going to go to the White House, and I think that'll be the neat part for me, is to see Buster in the same room with President Obama.
Well, if the president asks about me, tell him I'm here.
Yeah, okay.
And
okay.
Rennell can't go either because she hurt her leg, and we're here the next time he comes in town.
Hey, if he can go to Tanzania for lunch, he can fly out here and have lunch with you, Mark.
Well, Andy, we sent Lee Hammer in Buster Posey's place in 2011. This year we send the reigning MVP, so it's a wash.
Okay.
There you go.
Have a safe trip, and I look forward to talking to you next week. Thanks, Andy.
All right, fellas. Enjoy. Take care.
All right. That is the great Andy Bagley. Always a pleasure to have him at CSN Bags with two G's on Twitter.
Yep.